This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Somehow it doesn't feel quite right to call Peter Korn's new book a memoir. Really, it's more. It's more of a deep meditation. Korn is a master New England furniture maker whose work has been exhibited in some of the nation's top galleries and museums. He is founder and executive director of the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship in Rockport, Maine.
Korn's book seeks to connect head and hand, spirit and toil, meaning and physical matter, but not just any matter, not the mass-produced, industrialized stuff of everyday consumerism. Rather, we're talking about beautiful things made by someone who cares. And to that end, the book's title has a bit of a declarative feel. It's called Why We Make Things and Why It Matters, The Education of a Craftsman. But if you shift the emphasis just slightly, you open the door to Korn's more profound purpose. He's asking a question. Why do we make things? Why does it matter? Well, hopefully we'll get a little closer to answers to those questions now, because Peter Korn joins us from Portland, Maine. Peter, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure to have you. Your book is truly beautiful. I spent most of the day with it today. But I wonder if you might be able to start with reading an excerpt from an early part of your book where you describe all the thinking and decision-making that has to go into the earliest parts of furniture making.
I'd be happy to. And the chapter is called The Seductive Ideology of Craft. And this part goes, in furniture making, beginnings are critical. For a simple frame and panel cabinet door to stay flat over the long haul and not become too tight in summer or overly gapped in winter, success starts with the choice of timber. Not just what species or which plank, but also from which part of the board one saws the stiles and rails, how dry the wood is, the method by which it was dried, and how it was stored and handled. All of this before the actual work of milling the timber flat and square, laying out and cutting the joinery, making and fitting the panel, assembling, trimming, fitting, hinging, latching, and finishing. Throughout the entire process, the quality achievable at each stage is utterly dependent on the care with which the craftsman has accomplished every previous step. Likewise, as someone trying to write about the nature and rewards of craft, it seems important to construct a sound foundation by being precise early on about what I mean by craft.
That's Peter Korn reading from his new book, Why We Make Things and Why They Matter. So, Peter, let me start off right there. When you're talking about craft and craftsmanship, what are you talking about?
Well, historically, it's not that long ago that everything we use in life was made by hand, as we would express it. And in the Industrial Revolution, making by hand more or less became obsolete for most production of goods and trades. And today, when someone is a craftsman in the industrialized world, we generally make things more as an artistic, self-expressive practice. It's not that we're making things that society is demanding. We're making things to explore our own lives, and we are, in a sense, then making them available to the public as anyone in the arts does.
Hmm. So there's craft, and then there's being a craftsperson, craftsman, craftswoman. If you'll allow me, I would like to treat this interview very much as you might treat the art of making a fine piece of furniture, kind of peeling things back layer by layer and letting the meaning reveal itself. So what I'd like to do is start off on the most outside layer here. For example, I want to ask you, when you today, at the age you are and the experience that you have with woodworking, with furniture making, when you first see a piece of unworked wood, what do your eyes see?
When I look at a plank, I look at the how straight and flat it is, what sort of bow it may have, the color, how uniform the color is, what the proportions of sapwood and heartwood are, because one or the other may be more desirable. I will lift it and touch it to see how much moisture is in it. For that, I can tell by the weight for that species how dry it is, which is very important. So those are the kinds of characteristics I'm looking at when I first look at a board.
And do you see what it could become?
There are furniture makers who meditate on the wood and let it tell them what to make. I'm from the other side. I'll design a project, and then I'll find the wood that suits itself to the project.
And the reason why I ask is because frequently through the book, there are many passages where you talk about your hands becoming smarter, your hands becoming more experienced. You almost refer to them as beings or creatures of their own intelligence as you got to know wood and furniture making better. So talk to me about that process, about what it meant to you and what understanding you got about life that going through all of that effort and toil gave you.
Well, first of all, I should say I grew up the son of a lawyer and an historian, and never did anything with my hands till after college when I became a carpenter on Nantucket in 1972. And I found working with my hands and that for the first time to be not enlightening in a spiritual sense, but what a lot of new information it was to find out that when you work with your hands, it can be tremendously engaging, fully engaging, I should say, to the person and satisfying. So that's how I got started on it. And it does take, to become skilled, at least skilled at woodworking, furniture making, does take a lot of time and intent and discipline. But when you know what you're doing and you're working in the workshop, the entire day can kind of go by in a dance of making, and your head and your hands are working together from the same page, reading from the same page. There's not a lot of deliberation, and it's just an amazingly integrated whole feeling, like you as a person are firing on all pistons at once.
In fact, you write about how in 1974, November of 1974, I believe, in Nantucket, you have what you called your first epiphany, working with wood while you were making a cradle for friends who were expecting a baby.
Yes, as a carpenter, I loved working with my hands, but I was working on a crew and I was working to someone else's standards all the time. And then the first people that we knew who were having a child had a baby due in a few days, and I thought I might make them a cradle, and I saw picture of a nice cradle in a book, and I went into an unheated old barn with a rusty table saw, bought some pine and dowels, and I made this cradle in 3 days. And that was an epiphany in the sense that, really, because I knew what I wanted to do from that moment on. It suited me so well. I had not a clue what I was doing, but I was doing the work to my own standards at my own pace, and I could really strive for excellence in a way that I did not get to on a carpentry crew.
And you write about it so beautifully. You say that the cradle, after 3 days of intense focus in the cold and solitude, it was a miraculous birth in its own right. You had somehow transformed benign intent into a beautiful, functional object. Listeners, we're talking to Peter Korn. He is a master furniture maker and founder and executive director of the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship in Rockport, Maine, and author of the new book, Why We Make Things and Why They Matter, The Education of a Craftsman. And I'm wondering, listeners, do you take solace and refuge in craftsmanship? Are you a person who maybe has a full-time occupation, or in your spare time, do you make things? And if so, why does working with your hands satisfy you in a way that other work may not? Have you experienced in your workshop or garage or kitchen that sort of epiphany that Peter Korn just described? Let us know at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Twitter at Radio Boston. Peter Korn, there's a lot of really big questions that you pose in the book, and one of them has to do with the fact that when you talk about gaining meaning through craft, it really has to do with particular kinds of craft, that objects and physical objects that we can touch and feel and handle and interact with are essential to this. Now, why are objects so essential to the lessons that we can learn from craftsmanship?
Well, I guess I want to state a larger picture for me first, which is what I hope I'm writing about ultimately in the book is that the process of having an idea and then doing the hard work to manifest it excellently in the world is what I perceive as the source of fulfillment and meaning. That is the sort of fulfillment of meaning people find so lacking often in modern life. And craft is one way to do that. Craft is a particularly great way to do that, but writing is a way to do that. Choreography, cooking, they're all ways to do that. And craft is so wonderful in part because we're dealing with material and you can't fool a piece of material. It roots you in reality. You can't pretend the chisel's sharp. It either is sharp or it isn't. Mm-hmm. You can't pretend the joint is tight. It either is tight or it isn't. And it's great to be working with something that is so actual.
And does that actuality, I mean, it's a... And I'm speaking from my limited personal experience here from high school woodworking. So forgive me if I sound a little bit ignorant, but there's also something particular about wood, for example, because you smell it when you're working with it. You feel it with your hands. You know everything from the grain that you were describing earlier to the sense of the dust that it creates, that it was at one time a living thing. Is there something particular that you gain as a craftsman from working with organic materials, say, that you wouldn't gain from metalworking, painting, other forms of craft?
Well, it seems to me that human beings have been fashioning tools and objects that make life better and livable out of natural materials for millions of years. And we must have an intrinsic relationship to those that's biological in a sense. Yes, I respond strongly to wood, much more, for example, than working with metal. And I think that warmth of wood that we perceive is really a longstanding connection that we evolved into.
Mm. Now, speaking of evolution and longstanding connections, your own sort of journey through to becoming a master craftsman takes a lot of turns that you describe in the book. After you left Nantucket to sort of strike out on your own as a furniture maker, you describe basically, almost an entire year in Maryland where you hardly saw another human being? You were just mostly in your workshop the whole time?
Yes, I rented a little house with a one-car garage that I set up shop in. I didn't know anyone in Maryland. I just happened to land there, really, and worked every day alone. And I had to clear my voice and practice saying hello when the phone rang because it might ring once every few days. I didn't do that on purpose. I mean, I'm not saying I was happy being that isolated, but I will say that for me— the process of becoming a craftsman was a process in the sense of building an identity. And when you're in isolation, it's a lot easier to in some ways, to forge a new identity before you have to subject it to the public. So I can look back and say, maybe that's what I was doing.
Mm. Does it... in order to sort of forge that new identity, as you're saying, is sort of a monastic period in life? Is that required? I mean, it's tough going to be in such splendid solitude, even.
No, I think that every young person is in a flagrant process of forging an identity. This is simply how I chose to go about mine, but it is in a sense what we do. Most obviously when we're young, but really throughout our whole lives, is we create and edit and maintain stories of the world and how we fit into it that are our identity, among other things. And I have simply found for myself that craft, being engaged in craft, has been a great way to do so.
Mm. Well, we've got a couple callers who want to share some stories with you. Listeners, we're speaking with Peter Korn. He's author of the new book, Why We Make Things and Why It Matters, The Education of a Craftsman. Let's turn to Craig, who's calling from Northampton. You're on the air, Craig.
Great. Thank you, Peter. Hey, I just wanted to say I had sort of similar experience. I was starting out to be a med student and wound up in Cape Cod in Provincetown, Truro, with a carpenter, and we started building strange buildings with huge chisels called slicks and beams that were, 12 by 12 that ran for 30 feet and just doing things the old-fashioned way. And I don't know, I always drifted back into using hand tools. And now, strangely enough, I just went up to a lumberyard up in Greenfield And the lumberyard was full of these beautiful trees and slabs that were 4 and 8 inches thick and 30, 40 feet long. So I cut a section out of one of these things, and I'm making a bowl in my apartment here with a scorp, which you'll have to explain to them what it is. A scorp. And every night I get up, you know, 11, 12, midnight, whatever, I'll make the bowl a little deeper, you know, and you just sit there and carve with this beautiful tool, and there's shavings all over the floor, you know, and it's in my kitchenette. I don't really care. Sawdust on the floor, it's marvelous.
Craig, thank you so much for your call. I've loved hearing your experience and your stories there. Peter, for those who aren't so familiar with the tools of woodworking, what is a scorp?
There are so many arcane tools, scorps, travishers, and a scorp is a tool that allows you to, in a sense, scoop wood out of a relatively soft wood. You wouldn't use it on a really hard wood so that you can create a declivity. I realize that's not a great explanation, but that's as good as I've got right now.
Well, I think one thing that Craig's getting at, which is a major theme in your book, and you even have a phrase for it, you call it that craftsmanship in a way is thinking with things, that it's an expression of how we see the world or how we're engaging or struggling with the world through an object. So tell me a little bit more about what you mean by thinking with things.
I will. The writing of this book was really an 8-year process where I started with some strongly held convictions and then explored them and analyzed them and saw where I was on the wrong track and where I was on the right track. And one of the things I felt when I started writing the book is that we think with words. That's what's going on in our minds. And when I really looked at what I'm doing in the workshop and what thinking feels like, I realized thinking takes place at a level well below the level of language. And we can think with words, as when we write or speak. We can think with material, which is what happens when you're involved painting or building something out of clay or wood. And just as an example of how we don't think with words, so often we're looking for the right word to express a thought, and the thought is already there, but the words aren't. And so thinking takes place at some deeper level, and there's many ways to do it.
Hmm. So let me ask you point blank then about that one of those questions that you sort of gently pose in the title of your book. Why does it matter that we make things?
May I just read two sentences?
Please do.
This is the close of the introduction, and it says, "In short, writing this book has been a remarkable process of discovery. This is only fitting, since what I have come to see, bottom line, is that creative effort is a process of challenging embedded narratives of belief in order to think the world into being for oneself, and that the work involved in doing so provides a wellspring of spiritual fulfillment." And if I say why making matters, that's the answer. It when you set out to bring something into the world that's never existed before, you are going to have experience that you've never had before, and that will extend your understanding of who you are and how the world's put together. And I think that's the nature of all creative arts, is that that's what happens. It expands the individual's point of view, and therefore it expands the society's point of view.
In the modern day and age that we live in, do you worry that basically most of the forces in modern life kind of work in opposition to the effort, you know, the spiritual, mental, and physical effort that it takes to truly, you know, care about something, to care about a craft, to care about creating something of quality?
I worry because living modern life is stretching us or taking us further and further from some deep roots that we have that we can't escape, because we are biological beings. We've been living in the material world and making things out of material forever. It's deeply ingrained in us to find satisfaction by making things, and it's deeply ingrained in us to understand the world and ourselves through the objects that surround us. Mm. Objects always express a point of view of the culture and place and time in which they were made.
I'd like to take another quick call here. Alan is calling from Wakefield. You're on the air, Alan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm actually a creative writing teacher at the high school level, and I know it might be looked at as apples and oranges, you know, writing and craftsmanship, but I just think there's a tremendous value to the process of creation, and I see it every day in the faces of my students. I see them to come up with this little bit of piece of an idea, and to see them work through it, and at the end of the day, they have a sonnet, or they have a bit of script, or they have something tangible that was once nothing and is now something. And I don't know if you agree, but I think part of the wonder is that we live in times in which so much is presented to us, mm-hmm. that the very thought that we can be the ones doing the creating, it's like truly wondrous. And so I'll take your answer off the air.
Alan, thank you so much for your call. Peter, your thoughts on that?
I just want to say that Alan said it as well as I possibly could. That's exactly what I'm writing about. And I would say that that sort of creative exploration and enjoyment and satisfaction is available to anyone, anytime, in any medium, whether you're knitting a sweater at home, writing a poem for next week's writers group, or working at a high professional level.
Now, Peter, we've just got a couple minutes left, and I want to close with the part of your book which really hit home to me the most, because you seem to come to a conclusion in a moment that you call your second epiphany as a craftsman, where really the thing that you've been crafting the whole time is yourself. Can you
Yes.
tell us what your second epiphany was?
Yes. The background is that I became a furniture maker in 1974 and was self-employed. By 1980, I was showing in art galleries, so I had to write artist statements. And what I was writing in artist statements around 1980 was that I was trying to make furniture that had the qualities of simplicity and integrity and grace. 10 years later, I was working with a critic to write an artist statement, and I realized that the reason I had become a furniture maker in the first place was to cultivate the qualities of integrity and simplicity and grace in myself. And then I realized, so the reason I go into the studio every day isn't because the world needs another chair or table. It's because I expect at the end of the day to come out of that creative gauntlet as a different person, and I don't know how I'll be different. I know I'll learn something along the way. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that that describes what is essential in every creative art.
So if it's not too gauche to say, the thing that we are creating, once again, is ourselves, and that's why we create.
I think we are creating, in a sense, the story of ourselves, the map that we place on the world so we understand who we are and how the world functions.
Well, Peter Korn is founder and executive director of the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship in Rockport, Maine. He's author of the absolutely gorgeous new book, Why We Make Things and Why It Matters, The Education of a Craftsman. Peter, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, it was a delight, Magna. Thank you so much.
And listeners, we've got a photograph of some of Peter's work at our website. And while you're there, drop us a line about the things that you do, how craftsmanship has changed your life. We're at radioboston.org. There's more of the show in a moment. I'm Magna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.